Hello, and welcome to A Marvelous Lunch Break. This week, we've been watching 2018's Venom, and now we're here to ask all of the important questions, such as, why does this movie exist? Do you think the producers live in a world where there aren't over 40 other superhero movies you'd rather watch? And have you ever seen a more riveting fight between two competing oil spills? All this and more on today's A Marvelous Lunch Break. Joining me today, as always, Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison. How are you doing?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. And speaking of parasites that you can't get rid of, it's Agent Martin Carter. How are you?
You can get rid of me if you want. I can just exit the Zoom meeting right now.
That's fine.
You don't have to rock it to get rid of me.
Well, it's good to be back anyway, and it's great to be hanging out from our isolation chambers. Much like the victims of Barton Drake. Anyway, hello as well to all our listeners this week from around the world. If this is the first time you're tuning in, or if you're back for more, you know there are definitely going to be spoilers in this podcast. And if you're listening to us, please remember to review and subscribe so you can get more of this more regularly. Also, if you need some great Quarren memes in the meantime, follow us on our Instagram account. Anna, what's the details?
A Marvelous Lunch Break.
Great. Solidly delivered. That's a classic 10 out of 10, A Marvelous Lunch Break intro, despite the current conditions. So welcome to you both. Usually, at this point, we kick off with Anna's one-minute roundup of the movie. Now, I mean, this movie's pretty much about 1 minute long as far as I'm concerned, so I don't think you should have any problems in summarizing the depth of this plot, right?
Yeah. Let's see.
You do sound convinced.
I've entered with confidence before, so we'll see. We'll see what happens, shall we?
Well, let's go for it. I'm gonna just get up the stopwatch here. I'm ready to go when you are. Are you ready? You've had a difficult time this season.
We've had
only last week you had a double failure. So the odds are against you, I'm afraid to say. But I believe, I'm just saying, I believe in you. I'm just saying the bookies don't.
Okay.
Right, 3, 2, 1, go.
Spaceship crash, and we get a bunch of dead astronauts and escape black goo monster. In San Francisco, Eddie Brock is established as a mumbly agitator journalist who detonates his life taking on super evil Elon Musk, and 6 months of loserdom finds him scrambling for money while Evil Corp infects homeless test subjects with alien goo with super gross deadly results. After an ill-advised trip to the evil lab, Eddie picks up a parasitic passenger, and after garbage and live lobster eating, he and his squishy companion Venom invade Evil Corp goons with a straight-up don't strike on the populated streets of San Francisco. As Eddie gets increasingly pale and sweaty, ex-fiancee Annie and boyfriend Dan let a helping hand resulting in symbiotic separation, doggy possession, and a kidnapped Eddie. Luckily, Annie and Lady Venom saves Eddie's ass, but the wayward goo, aka Riot, has made its way across the world, and it's got its hooks into super evil Elon Musk and plans to bring all the other goos to Earth in a full-on alien takeover. Thankfully, Venom has a total change of heart and has decided to take on Riot in a gooey CGI final battle. After flaming victory, things are looking up for Eddie. He's flirting with Dan's girl, back on the media circuit, and his sneaky internal sidekick is along for the ride with a hunger for street thugs.
Oh, you nailed it! Yeah. So you were on 53 seconds when that finished. There we go.
Turns out we just need Marvel films with no plot.
Yeah. It's simple.
Yeah. It helped a lot. It helped a lot that nothing happened in this movie.
You said gooey quite a lot.
I did say gooey a lot. Yeah.
You said gooey quite a lot. Thankfully, they didn't say gooey in this movie quite a lot. But I feel like none of them ever acknowledged the liquid nature of this, parasite? Symbiote is what I think it would want to be referred to as. So obviously, we've been watching, you know, Venom. 2018, this came out. It's not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's not part of the Spider-Man universe or any previous Spider-Man universe. But it is a movie that's somehow been made, and it's part of the Spider season, because Venom is like a prolific Spider-Man villain, I guess.
Oh yeah.
Or depending on the time of year, anti-hero, or friend, or is Spider-Man? I don't know. The lines are blurry. But ultimately, it's a movie for us to watch, and we have done that. And it features the following people. So let's get some cheers and boos for this very small main cast. First off, we've got Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock and or Venom.
Yay!
Yeah.
Okay, I'll take that. We've got Michelle Williams as Anne Weying.
She grew on me. Yeah.
She grew on me. That's, sure we'll add that to her IMDb page right now. We've then also got Riz Ahmed as Carlton Drake and or Riot.
No.
Oh, come on. Poor Riz Ahmed.
It's a shame because, like, he's a good actor. I like him in the other stuff he's been in. He was in Rogue One. He was awesome in that. He's recently done, like, a really short film that sort of sets this very intense poem about immigration issues in the UK, which is, it's fucking harrowing, but it's so good. And this, I think he just wasn't given enough to do, to be honest. He was just like a super evil Elon Musk, just had a little bit of a monologue in there about wanting to save the planet. It's like, all right, calm down.
Don't they all, though? Don't they all?
Say it again?
Don't they all?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like a classic, you know what he really reminded me of was the villain, it's a Yellow Jacket in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what his, can anyone remember what his stupid real name is? Not the actor, the...
Something Cross.
Yeah, because it was like Cross Enterprises, wasn't it? Darren Cross.
Was it Darren? It was not Darren, was it?
I'm pretty sure it was Darren. I bet you it was Darren. If you, so one of you look that up, it was 100% Daz. I'm telling you. Anyway, so, you know, I feel about this movie is that it's really weird that Tom Hardy's in it.
Is that it for the cast? Or just the three cast members we do it?
Can you remember anyone else who was worth mentioning in this movie?
There is the woman scientist.
Anyone that you can remember by their real life name?
Yes, Jenny Slate. So she played Dr. Skith or something. I never got her name because it was very distracting because every time they said her name, it definitely sounded like they were saying Dr. Skirt.
Dr. Dora Skirth.
Skirt. But the way they were saying it, the fact that when they said it quickly, it definitely sounded like they were saying skirt, like Dr. Skirt. And I was like,
what else do you know Jenny Slate from? No offense to Jenny Slate. I recognized it, but I've got no idea of her real life name or her character name.
So she's primarily a comedic actress, which I was surprised to see her. And to be honest, I don't think it was a particularly strong showing from her. But she's in Parks and Rec. She plays John Ralphio's crazy sister.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa, yes. And she's hilarious in that. Yeah. And then the other actor who I was surprised to see, I don't know what his real name is, but he was Dan, Annie's boyfriend. And Say it again.
Dr. Dan.
And he was really nice. He was like a nice, upstanding guy. And I always really like it when they play against the trope, sort of like in Ant-Man when like the stepdad is actually like a really nice guy. And this guy, he was really nice, which is why I don't like that Annie was like stepping out on him at the end.
Isn't that the trope? The opposite, that the stepdad's like a dickhead? Because usually it's like stepdad's like super cool. In movies, at least. I can't think of any movies.
No, in movies, like, the step-parents are always, like, the kind of the dummies or the really mean ones, the ones you have to, like, fight against and everything.
But I really liked that they didn't get back together at the end. I thought that was
good. I like that too. Yeah. But so the guy who plays boyfriend Dan, he is another comedic actor. I don't know if you've ever seen the show Veep.
His name's Reed Scott.
Reed Scott, yeah. So he's in an American HBO show, which is hilarious. Martin, you were saying you're getting a bit interested in American politics. Yeah. That's a great show to watch. Okay. So funny. But yeah, so he's one of the main cast members of Veep, and he is fantastic. Again, not given too much to do here. He was fine.
So just going down the list of characters in this movie, really. Apparently one of the astronauts from the opening scene, his astronaut name is J.J. Jameson.
Oh.
Oh. Mm. So he's supposed to be Jonah Jameson.
No, I mean...
Not Jonah. Jonah. His son, John?
I mean, he gets exploded. I think that's just an Easter egg more than anything.
Well, because like in some iteration of Venom, it is Jonah Jameson's son who's the astronaut, and he brings the symbiote to Earth from the moon, yeah. I think.
I can't say I'm too like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've just done a quick Google search. He's completely spot on there. But I mean, I'm not too up on my Venom history. You know, yeah. I think there's a short window of time where I cared about Venom. And it was maybe about 3 months long and then immediately stopped caring again.
It wasn't during the 2 hours you watched this film for.
Well, we'll come on to that. But I think despite the scathing reviews that the first 10 minutes of this podcast has given it, the results may surprise you. So, you know, I'd hate to do the thing where we sort of talk through the movie in step by step, but because it's brand new to at least two of us, I think we at least need to dissect it in some way based on, you know, how it went. And for me, the start of this movie starts weak, like so weak. And the first thing that I noticed, and it's so interesting because we discussed this in the last podcast. So if you've not listened to it, go back and listen to that. But we discussed this idea that the MCU movies are inherently better than everything else because they come from such a strong starting point. They've got this established world. They've got characters, scenes, locations that they can pull on really easily. And it makes you feel like you're in this comfortable world where you know everything that's going on and you're a part of it as well. Instantly, this movie, the first maybe 20 minutes of this movie felt like I was watching a film about someone who is in a completely empty world. Like, he goes and has a chat with his girlfriend. So Eddie Brock and Anne were chatting in like a bar. And like, you know, you can barely see people in the background. It's completely quiet. You know, they're talking to each other, but it's really like, why are you in this bar where you could just be on the street or something? It felt like you were completely isolated from the rest of the world. And I don't feel like you ever feel that in Marvel movies at the minute. You know, there will be someone in the background that you recognize or say like, I've been, and you could make the argument, oh, well, that's because Marvel movies are established, but I've been, you know, because I hate myself, watching the MCU again. So I'm working my way through, you know, your classic MCU movies at the minute. And Iron Man 1, even with no background or established characters, in that movie, there's the bar scene where they have the party. You know, it's where you've got that great Stan Lee cameo as Hugh Hefner. And immediately you're like, okay, I'm recognizing some of these people that have already been established in the movie. I'm seeing Obadiah Stane. I'm seeing Pepper Potts. I'm seeing the reporter that you know, he's a difficult time. And you sort of feel like there's busyness and that he's part of a larger world. But this is like the opposite. All of the start of this movie feels like they're not part of a world that exists or cares. I don't know. Am I talking crazy? How did either of you feel about that?
I think that's an interesting point. I think you're probably right. For me, the whole movie, it did feel like it was just like very dark. It was really like saturated in this weird like tone. It felt really like murky all the time. Like inside the labs were always like these really dark colors with like this weird lighting. Again, same like we said with Ant-Man, like that looks like an evil lab. Like anyone that walks through that or even sees it like on the hill would think like, there's some nefarious shit happening in that place.
Why do they always work at nighttime? Like they always work in the dark at nighttime. Like surely when they break into it, they should be breaking in during the day.
Yeah, totally. And also the like the fact that they were doing this like secret plot, and yet like 80 people were involved. Like when he was like talking to like a group of scientists, it was like a huge fixing something on the thing. Good, sorry. The whole way that like people were kind of like interacting with each other, like in the labs, and like when Eddie goes to like confront whatever the guy's name was, evil Elon Musk, super evil Elon Musk.
His name is Carlton Drake.
Right, Carlton Drake. Like when he goes to like confront him in the lab, like when he's doing like that journalist piece, and he's like stolen Annie's like lawyer information to like attack him with. Like there were so many moments where I was like, I don't really feel this is how people interact with one another. And I think that is something that like the MCU does really well, like kind of even in like the really fantastical settings and like crazy shit is happening on. People are very, like characters are really like truthful with one another. Like that sort of makes sense the way they interact. And that was the thing that struck me most, like in the beginning part of this film. I was like, I don't feel like people are acting in the way that like normal human beings would act together.
I think the kind of lack of other people kind of played into his loneliness quite well. I thought like he was kind of a loner for a lot of it, but I agree that it took a long time for things to get superhero-y. Like it took like half an hour for anything really like fantastical to happen to anyone. And I think that's fine when you have a main character who you really like spending time with. So like if you think about those other kind of classical anti-heroes that we've come across so far, that's like Ant-Man, like Deadpool, like Wolverine, sometimes you kind of don't mind if they're going about their daily business because they're kind of fun and interesting to be around, or the environment they're in is fun to be around. Whereas with Venom or with Eddie Brock, it was kind of like really pedestrian. There just wasn't a huge amount of, like, he was fine and he had a bit of like color and a bit of humor, but generally it was all a bit meh.
Yeah.
In terms of like him as a character.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like I like Tom Hardy in this role. I think there were moments that like I really enjoyed. I do like how there were the obvious times where he threw himself into it, like the fish tank or the lobster tank when he climbs in there, just like snack on the lobsters. I do think he did like kind of give a lot to this to the role, but yeah, I think because he started out, and I understand why, like he started out as like not a particularly likable character. Like the choices he made about his relationship with Annie, sort of being this kind of like in your face, like kind of agitator type guy. He wasn't someone that I felt the need to root for a big part of the film. And then because it took so long for Venom to show up and for like that kind of like combined relationship to happen, I would have liked to have, even though we were spending time with Eddie, I still feel like I didn't know him very well. So like the kind of dichotomy of like Venom and him, I didn't know kind of like what Eddie was struggling against, what Venom was actually bringing to the table. So I felt like that was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, you didn't really know what Eddie Brock's moral compass was. Like, is biting off a head bad, but everything else is fine? Like, you don't really know what his shades of grey are, really, I don't think.
Yeah, and like, you know what was difficult, I thought, is that it was like, okay, so he's clearly an investigative journalist, and he's clearly, like, really well-respected, but at the same time, there's no, background of other things that he's worked on. Like they could have easily done some sort of like, you know, way a segue, you know, some sort of like hint or nod to like his previous work, you know, show you some other people that he's taken down and like establish the world before this movie exists. Like, I'm gonna get so stuck in this rut of comparing this to Iron Man 1. Because I've just watched it. Like, my thinking is that it's almost, like, indefensible, because Iron Man 1 is like, you've not got that history of the MCU. And that movie, like, opens up with this, the first, like, pre-credits of him in the tanks getting, like, stuff. And then it flips back to, like, you know, 2 days or 2 weeks earlier or whatever. I think it's 2 days earlier. And like that 2 days earlier, even though it's like 20 minutes of the movie, it gives you so much exposition into who Tony Stark is. You know, you see him not turn up to an awards ceremony. You see him, you know, party on a jet with stripper poles. You see him like doing shit business. It's like you really get a sense of who Tony Stark is before a major thing happened to him in his life, i.e. he became Iron Man. Where in this, you don't get a sense in 2 hours of who Tom Hardy, who Eddie Brock is before he becomes Venom. You just get, here's a shell of a human, and here's now Venom. So when it gets to this whole, like, we are Venom stuff at the end, I'm kind of like, well, I don't give a toss. You know, Venom's 10 times more exciting than Eddie Brock. So just consume him and fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, he is, but also, like, I don't feel like we got to know Venom all that well, either. Like, the sort of, I thought it was such an interesting idea, the, like, kind of end when, like, Venom revealed that, like, on his world, he was a loser, too. And, you know, he talks about, like, all the thing that makes him change his mind, like, change everything about, like, who he is as, like, a creature. It's like, oh, you've changed my mind, Eddie. You've made it so, like, I'm no longer going to be participating in this invasion. I'm going to save humanity. Like, what? Like, Eddie hasn't shown him, like, a really good time. Like, he hasn't shown him, like, you know, the cool things about Earth, or, you know, hasn't shown that there's, like, good people, or that Eddie wants to do good and we could do good together. Like,
they've not been out for brunch.
Yeah. Yeah. They haven't gotten to, like, they had that brief little weird, goopy heart to heart. And I think, again, it would have made more sense if we knew Eddie better and if we could just take for a matter of course, like, oh, Venom's been in his brain. He knows who Eddie is now too, and we can see why Venom would want to hang out with Eddie. Because we don't.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that. And it's, you know, it's like the first hint that I sort of really got. I'm not saying that I wasn't paying attention. I definitely was. But the first hint that I really got of like, oh, so this Venom thing that he doesn't want to be part of his symbiote race, I guess, is right at the end when he is fighting the big bad.
Yeah.
And it's like the big bad comes out of nowhere.
Yeah. So from all the way in like Malaysia, just like, you know, new to come to San Francisco. It was very strange.
Yeah, I really don't understand why Riot was trying to get there. Did he know where Venom was? And he was sensed that the other symbiote was there.
I can only assume he can sense the other symbiotes.
I thought it was, this is why I'm so confused. I thought that Carlton Drake had had Riot all along.
No, because he assumes the body of that woman in the market, and then he assumes the body of that little girl to get on the plane. And then assumed another body that I can't remember.
No, it was a little girl into Drake.
Okay, but there was just like a weird plot hole in that section that like all the other symbiotes were still like around the aeroplane crash, and obviously they were then transported back to San Francisco. Yeah. But then Riot, as the paramedic, set off walking away from the crash where the symbiotes were. I didn't really understand
it. So maybe watch the news.
Maybe. So supposedly there were about 40 minutes cut out of this film. I mean, don't get me wrong, I was quite happy when I turned and I was like, oh, this is only gonna be an hour and a half. That's amazing. It's almost like some sort of like Sony exec sort of sat down and was like, look, we haven't done quite what we wanted. It's not going to be good. At the very least, let's just like not make them sit through too much. But there were 40 minutes cut out. Supposedly, they were Tom Hardy's favorite 40 minutes. And I can only assume there was more, maybe some more exposition, some more explanation about like how
another bloody superhero movie where apparently the director's cut's going to be better. It's stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like they spent 40 minutes. They spent 40 minutes. But you see, this is what's crazy, and I'm really interested to hear what they cut out But I'll tell you what could have been dropped, and hopefully the two will fit in, is he spent 40 minutes in the movie trying to explain what the symbiote was and what was wrong with Eddie Brock that just didn't need to be there. It's like, we're not in 2008 anymore. We know what a superhero movie is. We're ready for it. We're all sat here ready to suspend our disbelief for flying red AI robots that shoot lasers out of their foreheads. And, you know, they spent 40 minutes trying to convince us why the symbiote works. And it's like, you could have jumped straight from, you know, symbiote on Earth, Eddie Brock has it, and it gives him a fever and he gets it, and not try and explain that to us. And I was like, sat there when he's getting an MRI scan, I'm like, I don't need to see someone getting an MRI scan. I was like, it's just not superhero. So if they'd have dropped all of that stuff, I don't know what's waiting in the wings for them to bring in, as far as you've read.
Oh, no, this is the thing. Like, what was cut out is very much under wraps. Like, people don't really know what was removed. I have a feeling if it was Tom Hardy's favorite stuff, then it probably was more things about, it was more about him kind of probably deepening the character of Eddie Brock, kind of deepening the relationship between Eddie and Venom. Because I do feel like that was – because I really enjoyed the parts, like, they were a bit kooky when, like, Eddie was learning his powers and, like, was, you know, was being like, oh, why are you doing this? Like, stop, no. Like, you know, oh, I'm sorry. You know, like, that, I thought those bits were fun. I liked the fight scene in his apartment. I liked, you know, Venom just being, like, hungry and sort of making him do kind of crazy things like that. But then we got, like, this 20-minute, like, high-speed chase through, like, populated streets where, like, the Life Corp or the Live Corp or whatever was, like, bombing the city sidewalks. Like, that would be, like, a terrorist incident. Like, the military would be brought in. Like, they wouldn't be able to get away with that. And that scene just went on forever. And then same with the office fight with, like, the smoke and the people there. Like, oh, I was so bored. I was so bored during those fights.
But I think it's really interesting, Dan, that you say it's not 2008 anymore. We know what a superhero film is like, because this film really reminded me of the early Spider-Man films, in the sense that, like, it's all quite dark and murky. There's not quite as much fun in it, as it takes itself a bit too seriously. It has a lot of caricatures in it. You know, there's lots of scientists in white coats doing bad things to homeless people. There's like a really big, overdrawn CGI fight at the end where the stakes aren't quite articulated properly. Like, a lot of it reminded me of, like, Spider-Man 3-ish. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I love that movie.
But it just felt like a throwback. And I don't know whether that's because it's Sony and they don't know how to make superhero films, but it really felt early 2000s to me.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that, like, I remember when this movie came out, and I mean, I think it did quite well. I think it made a fair amount of money, but a lot of the reviews, like, did drag this movie, like, out into the street and, like, beat it to death. And so I will say, like, from that low bar, I did actually enjoy it a lot more than I thought I was going to. I think the elements were there, but yeah, there was just something that, like, there was no real thread that kind of connected altogether. Maybe those missing 40 minutes of more Tom Hardy would have done that. But yeah, it's one of those things, like, I don't even think that if this was just, like, on a Sunday and I want, like, was on TV on a Sunday and I want something in the background, I think I probably would switch over to Disney Plus and watch Captain America again.
I agree, but now let's change the tone a little bit, because this movie was pap. Right, but
I don't know.
No, right. This is the thing. This movie is turd, but it made me so excited for Venom 2.
Really?
Like,
oh my god!
Yeah, like the last 5 to 10 minutes of this movie are perfect, and they've made me go, yeah. All I want now is Venom 2. Because, you know, after the fight scene, we get the best of Eddie Brock.
Yeah.
We get the best of Venom. We get the two of them working together in, like, a cool way. You know, we get them talking to each other in a way that Eddie Brock can deal with it, and Venom can fight, you know, can kind of, like, bite back and have the conversations in the head work well. You know, you've got him using his powers in a really effective way, and you've got that like, you did see these moments of Venom a couple of times in the movie where it's like, you know, the bit where he's like, you know, eyes, pancreas, liver, so many snacks. So many
yeah.
Snacks. And it's like the last 10 minutes is all that, you know, he's sort of toying and mocking with the guy in the shop, and then, you know, he just eats him, but then it's kind of, yeah, so you've got a great Venom moment, but as soon as he goes back to Eddie Brock, Eddie Brock's like, oh, just a parasite, you know, and it's like, he's playing Eddie Brock in a much more chill and together way as well, so it's like, if they'd have spent, you know, like, if they'd have spent 10 minutes to get to that point, I think they'd have had a great movie. But instead, he took 2 hours, and then we got 10 minutes of greatness. But that, and I know we'll come to the post-credits at some point, and I think probably we're going to have to acknowledge them before the post-credits of this podcast. But, I mean, how excited does the post-credits make? Well, it makes me super excited for the second movie, because I'm like, how about here? I've got an established Venom and Eddie Brock, who, as per the end of this movie, is pretty fun to watch. And I've got another character sat right there who, if they quickly and easily tell the story of who that is, I know that Woody Harrelson's gonna fucking smash a weird villain role in a movie. You know, get someone to play crazy weird guy, and we're spot on. So
please, in a different wig though, a different wig.
wig, but I mean, geez, what a lineup that's looking like for the second movie. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know. I'm super excited, but this is the exact problem that we had with Amazing Spider-Man 2, in that it's a trailer for things that don't exist yet. And they could have just whomped the first, you know, it could have been a friggin' montage scene, how he got the symbiote. It could have been a fucking montage, but instead it was like overproduced, overblown, made little sense, and they tried to make it make sense and failed. They could have just jumped straight to the end.
I can't, and this is really unlike me, I think, I can't decide whether I like it or not. Oh. But like, I think when I look back on it, I think of those really fun moments of like Tom Hardy in the grocery store and the fight in the apartment, and I forget about the stupid riot stuff, and I forget about the stupid fact that there's no plot or stakes or anything else in between. And I can't decide whether those little bits that I remember fondly and what it could lead into make it good, or whether it is just rubbish. Like I'm like massively conflicted.
It's interesting, but again, I think it that kind of goes to there are elements in there that works. Like, no one will deny that Tom Hardy isn't a great actor and sort of has the chops to sort of bring both like comedy and a bit of depth to, you know, a kind of kooky role when you think about it. I think you're absolutely right, Dan. The idea of Woody Harrelson playing I mean, I don't know that much about Carnage. I know a little bit about him, and he is like off the walls mental. I am well into seeing Woody Harrelson sort of like take that on. So I don't know, I guess maybe then what that means, Martin, is it's going to become one of those things that, like, if they nail the next movie, this movie will kind of like be bolstered up a little bit by comparison. So sort of like give it a bit of a reason to exist, because now, okay, so now we do know, okay, maybe it could have just been a 20-minute montage. We could have just had like a pre-movie. To sort of get introduced to Eddie and Venom. But yeah, I think if they do a good job, I think my estimations of this movie will raise in sort of retrospect.
But yeah, I'm massively conflicted. Like, there's just some things in this film like that I can't forgive. Like, I can't forgive the fact that you only found out why we had to stop riot as we were running through the woods to stop riot.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, oh, I'm gonna, oh, he's a bit of a team leader and he's gonna.
A team leader?
That's what he said. He's like, and he's got some good weapons and he's gonna bring everyone, all the other symbiotes to Earth to take it over. Yeah. And we have to stop him. I'm like, all right, well, it'd be nice to know that as we've been watching him walk across Earth for the last 2 hours, but fine.
Yeah, the stakes were always really confusing because you had sort of like, so there was, his name is Darren, by the way, from the Wasp guy. So you had sort of like the Darren Cross element of, obviously, Drake wants to like kind of up his like tech and everything, and he wants to like be powerful in that way, you know, live on other planets and things like that. So that's, you know, that's what the symbiotes will provide. But then he also has these sort of like altruistic motivations. So it's just, it's like, we don't have a good villain. So we don't understand like kind of who Drake is and kind of, I mean, okay, he is, you know, murdering homeless people basically, which is horrific, but we don't quite understand like the threat level of him. And then you've got Riot, who is supposed to be the ultimate big bad, but again, yeah, you're exactly right, Martin. You only figure out what
I'm just having a sneezing moment.
the hay fever starting. But yeah, you only learn like kind of Riot's motivations, like kind of well at the end. But then also for Eddie, we don't get a good sense of like what his personal stakes are. So I think that's why they spent like so much time trying to sciencey explain that that like all venom could be killing him. But then that is left kind of unresolved as well. So we don't know what like Eddie's personal stakes are throughout the film either. So I just felt like there was a real, yeah, I just never really knew what we were supposed to be motivated by in this film.
Yeah, I'm so conflicted. I know which bits I didn't like. I didn't like the bit where she became Lady Venom and then snogged him. That was weird.
Lady Venom! I forgot about that. That was so weird.
Because she was like, Lady Venom was like a super like caricature, like stencil drawing of what you imagine like the perfect woman is as well. Like, yeah. Looked nothing like the actual actor playing her. Mm-hmm. It was weird.
Yeah. I mean, and I would have loved to have heard the conversation that was going on inside their head. Like, what was Venom, like, saying? And I think, like, she made quite the leap from sort of seeing, you know, again, all saying, like, this thing inside you is killing you, to being like, all right, well, I'll let it hitch a ride in me from this dog. From this, you know, who knows where this thing has been. It's now been inside a dog. Yeah, I found that whole bit. I mean, I thought it was a kind of interesting reveal. Like, it's, you know, it's Annie as Venom. But yeah, that was a bit of a strange.
And how do you two feel about the solution to all the problem is just dubstep cannons again?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, fine, because it's like, you know, sort of established that sound fucks with Venom.
Mm.
Or the symbiote. But it was just they didn't have to use, once again, it's like they didn't have to use it so much. They really overplayed it to the point where it's like, that's what they're gonna do. So
yeah,
you know, you see it impact the symbiote really, really early on, and then they use it in the MRI machine, and then they use it in the MRI machine again, and then later on she starts doing it, and it's like, by this point I'm like, you figured it out, it's sound, just do the sound wave things. Where it wasn't delicately handled. It wasn't like that big sort of thing that you forgot from the start because you were so wrapped up in the plot, and then someone goes, wait a minute, 446,000 hertz. And they're like, what are we thinking this whole time? It's like, it's just so played out throughout the whole movie that you're expecting it by the end. Oh, fire and sound. That's how we're going to do this. Yeah. And lo and behold, the movie ended with fire and sound.
Yeah, that was actually better done. It pains me to say it, but that was better done in Spider-Man 3 when Peter realized, like, sound's going to get him out, and he creates that kind of cage of pipes and, like, yeah.
Well, this is just
something
like
Spider-Man 3 did better.
This is like roll up the dubstep cannon, and I don't have the problem. This isn't the problem with the dubstep cannon. it's more, because let's admit it, the dubstep kind of makes no sense for Hulk, right? But with this, they wheel it up, and then it's like you've basically been following them around with a dubstep cannon for 2 hours now. Of course, you're going to use it. So it just wasn't inventive. You know, there wasn't an inventive end to it. Blow up the spaceship. Oh, who thought of that? And that's the thing that sickens me with all of these like one note villains is there's no inventive end in sight. You know, okay, we're going to an extreme here, but Thanos, in the year between those movies, how many Ant-Man crawling up a butt stories did we hear? You know, people, the foe was so great and so well thought out that it was like, what crazy inventive way are they going to do? Are they going to get them? Well, this was like, it's not at all open to creativity and invention. And it just...
Yeah. Well, I mean, like Venom gave up his weaknesses like that. Like there was a conversation where he was like, like I think Eddie says like, oh, he doesn't like sounds, and Venom goes, and fire. I don't like fire. It's like, thanks, babe.
Good. Yeah. Well done. Great work. Yeah. So I don't know. Has anyone got anything else you want to talk about for this movie? Because you know what, I've prepared a mini MCU quiz for you, and if you want the quiz, then we can sort of wrap up this movie and maybe move on to that for a little bit.
Hell yeah.
I think like the plot of this movie, my opinions on it are also fairly thin.
My thought for this movie is average, probably a little bit subpar, but very excited for Venom 2. And if they take what they did by the end of this movie and build on that for Venom 2, then I have a lot of faith in Venom 2 being the Spider-Man 2 of this new franchise. And you know what? If they'd have reset the button and they'd have wanted to port this into the MCU, for example, I think it'd make a totally great B-list villain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think Venom could be a great B-lister in the MCU.
I mean, I really want to see Tom Holland as Peter Parker Spider-Man and Tom Hardy as Eddie Brock Venom interact. Like, I really want that.
I'd be into it, but Venom didn't need this much sell. That's the problem. No. So, Anna, does this movie stay or go for you?
Damn it. It's so annoying because Venom 2 has been pushed back like all other cinema. It was supposed to be coming out in October, and now it's like, I think it's even like June of next year or something like that. They just announced that on the Marvel or the Venom movie Instagram. I'm going to say stay with the hope that the second movie is going to be good and sort of justify that decision.
Martin, does this movie stay or go?
It can stay. It can stay. Because it doesn't really impact anything if it stays, right? So, like, unlike the MCU, like, there's consequences to us getting rid of things there. And sometimes the things are better to be out of the MCU, like Incredible Hulk, like Guardians 2, like Doctor Strange. Like, if this sticks around, it's fine. In the same way that, like, Ant-Man's fine, that can stick around. Like, yeah, it's all right. It can stay.
Well, there we have. I'm a stay as well. Because you know what? If this movie stays, we never have to go through this again, right? where if it goes, then someone one day either might be, we need to make a Venom movie, or they might try and do the origin story of Venom again, and we just don't need it. Let's go straight to Venom 2 and see where we go from there. But based on the last 10, 15 of this movie, it can stay. Absolutely. Genuinely, that's how good I feel about the walking down the street scene where he's having a conversation to himself. Brilliant. Perfect. Very Deadpool. You know what I mean? It's very,
it's in that Deadpool
category of, yeah, they've nailed the character at that point. But I just don't think they got it for the first bulk of it. So it can tentatively stay. But if Venom 2 is a mess, then the both of them can go.
Sounds good.
Great. So, MCU quiz time. Can't believe we've never done this, but this is an MCU screen time quiz. Okay?
Okay. So,
I have access to a master list of minutes on screen for every superhero or villain. So, you know, every main character that's been in the MCU. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you, so you can, you've got a choice now. Either you can have a round each, or you can have a joint couple of rounds.
I would say a joint couple of rounds.
Okay, joint couple of rounds it is. So I'm going to give you, what we'll do is we'll do tier one, and then we'll do tier two. And if we've got time, we might do tier three, okay? But what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you tier one Marvel superheroes. And I'm going to give you a list of five, yeah? And you've got to tell me in what order, from most to least, minutes of screen time they have had across the whole MCU.
Oof, okay.
Are you ready? You may want to get a pen and paper for this one. So, okay. I'm going to give you five superheroes, and you'll recognize these ones well. Are you ready?
Yeah, I let my dog in.
Oh. First up, Captain America. Spider-Man, Black Widow, Iron Man, and Thor. So I want them ranked from most minutes of screen time to least minutes of screen time, please. You're allowed to confer. It's a joint round.
I've got mine.
Okay, I think I've got mine too. So are we not competing against each other?
No, you want a joint, you said joint rounds.
Oh, right. Okay, gotcha.
But you
okay. All right, Martin. What do you think?
I think Iron Man, Cap, Thor, Spider-Man, Widow.
Ah, okay, interesting. So I've gone Iron Man, Cap, Spider-Man, Thor, Black Widow.
But Thor's got three films.
He does, but okay, yeah, that's a fair point. I forgot about
it. And he gets a massive showing in Endgame as well.
Okay, that's true. He does have a lot of screen time in Endgame. Okay, so Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, Spider-Man, Black Widow?
Yeah.
Okay, final answer, Dan.
Give me that again then, from top to bottom.
So Iron Man 1.
Yeah.
Captain America 2.
Yeah.
Thor 3.
Thor in third, yeah.
Spider-Man 4.
Spider-Man 4.
Black Widow 5.
Great first round. 5 out of 5.
Yes.
All correct. Iron Man with 360 minutes.
Jesus.
Captain America with 247. So near, you know, over 100 less minutes. Thor with 205. Spider-Man with 161. And Black Widow with 112 minutes. They make up five of the top six. Heroes in terms of overall screen time. Can you name the one that's missing?
Is it
Ant-Man?
Not Ant-Man.
It who else has their own film? Is it Nessa? Sorry, dogs getting all up in my grill.
I've got to push you for an answer.
Is it Jarvis?
It's not Jarvis. It's the Hulk. with 141 minutes. So fifth in that ranking would be the
Hulk. Wait. Sorry, my talk's being really annoying. So wait, do you mean like the Hulk as a character or Mark Ruffalo?
Well, Mark Ruffalo. So it's the Hulk and
Ed Norton.
Yes, so it's the Hulk as a character, including them in and out of greenness.
Okay.
This is all by the superhero name, so it includes them out of superhero. So, for example, Iron Man includes Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So now we'll get a little bit harder. We'll go to round two. So this is next tier. Okay. Are you ready for five names?
Yeah.
Hell yep.
Pepper Potts.
Oof.
Hank Pym. Black Panther. Hawkeye. And Nick Fury.
Ooh.
And I tell you what, make it even harder, I'll give you a minute on the clock.
Oh.
Oh my God. To confer and everything.
Yeah. You can
get
going.
Okay, so I'm thinking Black Panther 1.
I'm thinking Nick Fury 1 because he's in
Captain Marvel. Yes. Yep.
So I think the culmination of how many he's been in plus that film is quite a heavy amount of time.
Yeah,
but I have Black Panther 2.
Yep. I would say Hawkeye 3?
I think it's a red herring.
Half your time's up.
I think Hank Pym or Pepper.
No way. Hank Pym, I think, is dead last.
Okay, so Hank last. Can we go Pepper Hawkeye?
I think Hawkeye's above Pepper, but I'm willing to give it a go as Pepper is third.
Because if you think she's in the three Captain Americas...
Stop. I got to push you for a final answer here now.
Okay.
If so I've done Hawkeye dirty, I do apologize.
Okay. Do you want to read out our answers?
From most minutes to least minutes. Go. Okay.
So we've got Nick Fury, then Black Panther, then Pepper, then Hawkeye, then Hank Pym.
So close. You got three right.
Oh.
You got three right. But remember, as soon as you get one wrong, that means you've got two wrong.
Yeah.
Nick Fury, 79 minutes.
Yep.
Pepper Potts with 71 minutes.
No way!
Black Panther with 64 minutes.
I knew she was high up there.
That's crazy.
Black Panther with 64 minutes.
Yeah,
Hawkeye with, and you've got to remember, Black Panther has had a feature film about himself, and has only had 64 minutes of screen time. Hawkeye with 53 minutes, and Hank Pym at 51.
Damn.
I can't believe Hawkeye has not even had a movie's worth of screen time as one of the main Avengers. Really upsetting.
Do you see the thing that's going around on Entertainment, where Entertainment Weekly, where they're like, you can buy your Avengers team, and like they've got them tiered, and like Hawkeye is on the second tier. He costs £4. That is ridiculous. No, that's ridiculous. It costs two.
Okay, he's an important Avenger.
Here we go. Final round. Okay.
Yep.
Are you ready for some names?
Yeah.
Yes.
Agent Coulson.
Oof.
Odin.
Oof.
Drax the Destroyer.
Oof.
Killmonger. And Scarlet Witch.
Oof.
God.
And you got 30 seconds. You got 60 seconds now.
60, okay. So, Martin, I'm thinking, this is going to be really hard. I think Drax is probably up there.
Somewhere, yeah. I would put Scarlet Witch top, I think.
Really?
Mm.
Maybe. Mm. I'm torn between Drax and Scarlet Witch. So Drax like has almost two, not full movies, but then he's like really big showing in Endgame. Scarlet Witch, not so much.
But Scarlet Witch has a really good showing in Infinity War and Endgame and Age of Ultron.
Yeah, true. Okay, so maybe Scarlet Witch first.
Time's gone.
Drax.
Drax.
Drax second.
And then I want to say Odin. I feel like Odin's...
I would maybe say Killmonger.
Really? But he's in one film.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So Odin over Killmonger. I didn't listen to you with Pepper last time, so I'm gonna listen to you this time. So,
and then Agent Coulson last?
Yeah.
Stop. Your time's up. I'm gonna have to push you for an answer. What's okay. your ranking?
I feel like we've not done very well on this one.
Yeah. Okay, so first we've got Scarlet Witch. Second is Drax. Third is Odin. Fourth is Killmonger. And fifth is Agent Coulson.
You got 3 out of 5.
That's pretty good.
You're right. Agent Coulson was last. 21 minutes of screen time. Next up was Killmonger with 22 minutes of screen time.
Nice. Good one, Martin.
In third place was Odin with 24 minutes of screen time.
What the hell?
And then in... Next up was Scarlet Witch.
Oh, I'm sorry, Anna.
Who had 34 minutes of screen time. And the most screen time out of TSC was Drax with 40 minutes.
But that doesn't mean that Drax has got more screen time than the other Guardians, does it?
Does that mean that Drax has had more screen time than the other Guardians?
It can't have had more. He can't have had more than... They're just the ones you picked, right? Not the ones that...
Yeah, these are just groupings, not like in order of because otherwise, this would just there'd be loads of other people that had more screen time.
The original Guardians of the Galaxy. Little ad hoc quiz then.
Okay.
Which of the original Guardians of the Galaxy do you think had the most screen time, and who's had the least?
Ooh.
So it's definitely Star Lord and Gamora.
Yeah, I would almost say that maybe Gamora's had more screen time.
I'll tell you, there's 16 minutes in it.
Do you know what? I wouldn't be surprised because although Star-Lord spends a lot of time stood around talking to his dad in Guardians 2.
That's true.
But he's not really in the end two films, is he?
Yeah, and I think in Endgame, there's way more Gamora. There's a lot
of
Gamora.
Does it count as young Gamora? Does that count?
That's 5 minutes.
I'm going to assume it does. Yeah.
So maybe Gamora, Star-Lord.
Yeah.
Drax, Rocket, Groot? Or would you swap Rocket and Groot?
I think maybe Groot has more screen time than Rocket.
Yeah, because he's got that whole dancing credit scene.
Yeah.
He was in that plant pot. Okay, yeah. So Gamora, Star-Lord, Drax.
Yeah. Oh, the original ones. Yeah, so Drax, Groot, Rocket.
Yeah.
All wrong.
Oh,
you've got Star-Lord at 96 minutes.
Right.
Gamora at 80 minutes. Rocket Raccoon at 53 minutes. Drax at 40 minutes. And Groot at 34 minutes. Groot has had less screen time than Nebula.
Wow. Cool. Yeah. Really good that one.
So, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, everything for this. We could go into even more detail if you wanted, but I think there's some really interesting pickouts there, and hopefully it was a nice, fun little quiz. Maybe
it was great.
Prepare something else for next time. Anna, do you want to give us the details about what's coming up in our next edition?
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. So, the next one is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes! Which apparently, and I didn't realize, but that was previewed as the post-credits of Venom in the cinemas?
Yeah, so that's the end credits, which we will save to talk about in the end credits of this episode, as we do. but yeah, super excited about that. And then, to be honest, like, that's kind of the end of the road for us. I mean, we were supposed to have Black Widow, unfortunately. We were going to have New Mutants. We were going to have, this is much further down the line, but, you know, Venom 2 this year. We're going to have Eternals. Everything's very much up in the air. So I guess sort of after Spider-Verse, all that's left is for us to wrap up Spider season.
Well, I mean, or can I just make a suggestion? I've never watched it. But Spider-Man was part of this team once. The new Fantastic Four movie.
Ooh.
No, I'm out.
All right, okay. Well, you know, Spider-Man is one of the main members of Fantastic Four. I think it's worthwhile that we do that. And it's got Michael B. Jordan in it. So, you know, we've got reasons to watch it.
Food for thought. Let's think about it.
Maybe if we're at the season, we can put it out to our audience to determine what we watch in lieu of currently postponed movies.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Definitely.
And where would they possibly vote on that, guys?
Well, I think they should find us on our Instagram, A Marvelous Lunch Break, which, if I do say so myself, we've been crushing it lately on that feed. So come check us out.
And Anna, if listeners wanted to find out more about you, where could they?
They can also find me on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
And Martin, same question.
They can find me on Instagram at Martin Lips.
Great. Well, thank you so much for swinging by. Swinging by is not really relevant this episode. Thank you very much for
scooping
stepping
by.
Inside us. momentarily inside our podcast realm. This has been, I think, you know, a great week watching a new movie. I've watched the MCU again. I've watched so many movies. If you have one movie for people to go away and watch this week before they come here next that's available widely, what would you recommend they watch?
Spider-Verse.
I'm addicted. I'm getting through lockdown with the MCU, but also the Muppets.
The Muppets, amazing.
My Muppets like watch has come out of nowhere, and I've been working through all those movies. And I tell you what, there's some gems there. Catchy songs, little show tunes. The Muppets are doing it incredible for me. So maybe after Spider-Verse, entertain me a little bit. Go watch yourself a little Muppets movie, or, you know, just keep watching Spider-Man movies. come on, guys. There's 7, probably 8 Muppets movies. If we spin this podcast out long enough, we will have to watch them.
You know what? I'm not opposed to that. I love Muppets.
It's either Muppets or Fast and Furious. That's all I will say. Right.
I'm washing my hand.
Well, thank you very much, and we will see you in a few weeks' time for Into the Spider-Verse. Between now and then, thank you very much. Have a great few weeks. Bye.
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 So we kind of already talked about the main post credits, Woody Harrelson, crazy red wig, exciting. But there was totally like a full on, like long trailer or promo for Into the Spider-Verse at the end. And like they showed that in theaters as well. So like that whole clip would have been in people's cinema experience, which that would have been cool to sort of see that like for the first time, be like, what the hell is this going to be? I'm so excited. I'm so excited to watch it again.
Dan, have you not seen Into the Spider-Verse?
Yeah, I've seen it now. I saw it. I watched it when it came on. It was on offer on Amazon Prime for $1.99.
Good.
I watched it maybe about 6 months ago. But I'm excited to watch it again, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be a mixed one. I'm very interested to talk about it properly. You know, cartoons, not a huge fan. For a guy who's into comic books, right? For a guy who loves comic books, reads graphic novels, likes Marvel movies, superhero dumb stuff, cartoons, not really a big fan.
Oh, man, I'm so excited for next episode. I'm so excited. Okay.
So we'll see. We'll tune in for another debate-tastic episode. And either I can prepare a quiz, or maybe we'll spin the roulette and one of you guys can do a quiz. We can quiz each other. Who knows? but until then, stay safe. We'll speak to you all soon. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.